Hello and welcome in.
First Science Mixtape.
Because he shows them the magic and mystery of science in everyday living.
On Science Mixtape on Soho Radio.
Good morning. It's our birthday week. Soho Radio has been going for 1 year now. So happy birthday, Soho Radio. Yeah, we've got a great show coming up for you on the Science Club. It's all kind of birthday themed. So we're going to be learning how to make DIY party poppers. If you want to get involved, then all you need is to get a used loo roll, the cardboard tube from inside, some wrapping paper, a balloon, whatever you want to use for confetti, and some sellotape. So just grab those and you'll be ready to join us making that halfway through the show. Joining me today, I have the fantastic Peter Brook, who is both a film director and a scientist studying the epigenetics of asthma. Good morning, Pete.
Hello there, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you. It is a beautiful day.
It's glorious, it really is.
Light and airy. So before we start, I'm going to give you your weekly thunk. And because it's birthday themed this week, it's all about cakes. So birthday cakes, that's how we like to celebrate birthdays. And the cake that we know of, the sort of light and airy Victoria sponge, didn't really come on the scene till the sort of 18th, 19th century. And this was to do with the use of a special ingredient. So if you think you know what ingredient changed the heavy, flat pound cake into the light and airy sponge, you can tweet us at Soho Radio. And it's not necessarily the obvious one that you think.
I think I might possibly know because I'm terrible at making cakes. Now, the last time I tried to make, I did make a big, dense, heavy cake rather than one which was light and fluffy. So maybe I can figure this out.
Brilliant. Well, we'll see if Pete's got it by the end of the show. And for now, we're going to go straight to our first song. So, Pete, what are we listening to first?
Cool. So our first song is, for me, the unpronounceable Harasha Lights by Hot Chip, which has come out quite recently. It's a really good song. Hope you enjoy it.
Lovely, lovely start there from Hot Chip. I hadn't heard that one. I really, really liked it.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I think it came out like last week or something.
So, on to the next section, which is
Science News.
Brilliant. So that was the jingle for
excellent
all
jingle.
Our loyal listeners who have missed it the last two shows. And Pete, what was your favourite bit of science news this week?
So I was reading about octopuses this week, and basically they're a species that can change colour in like a really dramatic way.
Yeah.
But they're colourblind, and they have to change colour to blend into their surroundings. So everyone was trying to figure out like how can they see what's going on to change and blend into the background like that.
I did not know they were colourblind.
Yeah, how weird's that? I didn't either until I saw this news article. But apparently, what actually happens is that they've got like light detecting things in their skin, not their eyes. So when their skin gets close to something that's a certain colour, the skin can then naturally change to it. And then,
so kind of like when you see those kind of James Bond things and it's a car that has cameras and will just mirror its surroundings.
Yeah, exactly.
So octopuses already do that just with their skin?
Yeah, just naturally.
It's incredible.
Yeah, and it's so cool the way they like change colour is. They have little sacks of colour, which they can sort of like open up to show what's inside the sack of colour, and then hide it away, and then they've got three different colours that they can use. And then all of a sudden, they are changing all the colours, and they can go single colours or patterns.
Which are the colours that they use?
I think they use yellow, brown and red, and then behind it is sort of like a whitey blue colour. So then that's sort of like the background. So they can use a combination of all of those.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a real octopus?
Yes, and it scared the life out of me. I must have been like 10 and we were in Norway, I think, which is not where you'd expect to see octopuses, in a fjord. And the water was like 1 degree. I was having like shock from the cold. And all of a sudden I saw this octopus and just freaked out. And I tried to like scramble out of the water.
I once saw two octopi having a fight, which was really interesting because one of them like made its skin all bumpy. And yeah, you like definitely saw them like changing their colours.
Oh man, where was
that? Out in Madagascar.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Did one of them win? What was the outcome of the fight?
One like ran away and the other one chased after it. So I'm not sure exactly what happened.
Nah, that sounds turf wars for octopuses.
He was using his camera technology to become all creepy and scary. That is so cool. So we've got like James Bond of the animal world. my favourite piece of science news this week was... actually, I don't know if favourite's the right word, but it's really creepy. So Google have published a patent where they're creating these sort of human interactive controls for your home. They're saying, you know, people don't want to interact with like a remote control. They want to interact with something that's a bit more universal and can respond to your mood and can show emotion. So they've created like things that look like a teddy bear, but will control like your TV and your speakers and anything else wireless that you want to link it up to in your home.
That sounds and a it bit can, sci-fi horror-ish.
Yeah, I know. And it can like open its eyes to show surprise. And I think its four emotions are like boredom and surprise and sadness and happiness or something like that.
Oh man, that's
crazy. They were saying like, oh yeah, you want to make it like a cute design so even little kids will interact with it.
That's really interesting.
And maybe families will want to have more than one in all the rooms around their house. So
being watched by Furbies forever.
Basically it's like a wireless home controlling Furby. And a lot of kind of privacy campaign groups have sort of gone, whoa, this is far too Big Brother-esque. Like, and it does stress in the article, it's only a patent. It won't necessarily become an actual product that Google sells. Okay.
Yeah, because they have this really weird idea called the Uncanny Valley, which is basically if you try and make a robot that looks too much like a human, it becomes really sinister and creepy.
Yeah.
So they're trying to design robots which sort of look human-like, but not too much like a human, that it's kind of creepy. So maybe this is Google trying to figure out how to make something that you'd want to interact with without it looking too human. But I think
so
maybe
going
this...
for a cuddly toy instead,
which moves around.
Aspects of, you know, clowns coming towards you,
invoking like the Chucky horror movie thing. Like
one of my favourite bits though was, so the R&D team that came up with it, the title for the man in charge, so the inventor, his name is Richard Wayne Duval, and his job title, no joke, is Director of Rapid Evaluation and Mad Science at Google X. And I was like, this must be a joke.
That can't be a real job title.
That is actually on his LinkedIn.
Do you think that's what it says on his business cards?
It's what it says on his LinkedIn. It's amazing. I looked it up.
Oh, fantastic.
So, yeah.
That's the job title I might have to work towards one day.
Watch this space. Creepy toy remote controllers could be coming to a house near you. And then another very quick bit of science news was just that a new record has been broken for the furthest distance travelled by a hoverboard.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Excellent. And this is like Back to the Future year. Like he comes to 2015. So.
Oh my God, does he actually?
Yeah, I think so.
I didn't realise it was 2015.
Yeah.
Oh my God, how apt.
Definitely ready to rewatch them now.
So this happens over a lake and it, I think it's called Lake Uarau in, I can't pronounce that, in Quebec, Canada. And it's designed, it kind of looks like a giant drone copter. So I don't know if you've seen like drone cameras and they have those sort of four propellers. And he uses two massive fans and stands on top of it and he flies 905 feet across the lake.
That's quite far. It looks like he's just going to wobble over and get dragged along the lake in that picture
It does say that it takes quite a lot of skill and practice to fly it and it is very wobbly, but he wanted to prove that it could be done. So that we'll tweet a little video link to that because it's quite impressive to watch.
Yeah, I have to watch that.
But for now, Pete, what would you like as our second song?
Well, for my second song choice, I think maybe we could go for... Oh, hold on. I've got the perfect link. Octopuses, which change colour, to Jamie XX's new album, In Colour. It's Loud Places.
Love it. Yeah. Here we go. Didn't I take you to... Beautiful. Thank you very much, Pete.
Yeah, no worries.
Any particular reason why you chose that song today?
basically I've been that album comes out next week, and I've been sort of hyping over it for a little while now. So yeah, I'm excited to hear that, and excited to hear the rest of that.
Very nice. Do you ever sing along when you're listening to your songs?
Or, you know, when I'm alone or in the shower. Don't want to upset the neighbours or anything, so keep it down. But.
Well, singing is very on point at the moment because it's Eurovision Song Contest tonight.
Hooray!
Woohoo! We've just been having a little chat in the studio about how disappointed we are with the UK's entry this year.
I mean, I don't like electro swing anyway, and then this is sort of the worst level of electro swing for me. I mean,
for those of you that haven't heard it, here's a little sample. We could just talk over it.
It's very jaunty.
Yeah, and I mean, I do quite like electro swing, but the lyrics, if you listen to the lyrics in this song, it's just so old-fashioned. It's all about this girl going away from her lover, and he's like, don't get drunk and don't go out because, you know, you'll get tempted. And she's like, no, don't worry, I'm still in love with you.
I didn't make it past the first verse, personally. Like, I was like, I know what I need to know now.
Well, I was watching the Graham Norton show, so it was, you know, stay or leave, and I like Graham Norton, so
yeah,
I stayed.
Yeah, fair enough.
I'm going to fade this out now because it's too annoying.
So, that's our fill.
There we go. Don't have high hopes for that one. But it's interesting because singing is something that's really, really fun to do. And everyone kind of loves singing. Like, everyone sings along to their favourite songs. But a lot of people don't think they're very good singers. And there's actually quite a lot of science behind what makes people good singers or not.
Okay.
So essentially, everyone can pretty much sing, and there's maybe 2% of the population, according to a study in Toronto, that will have struggled to hear differences in pitch.
Does that mean they can't, like, appreciate music? Is that what it means? Or is it just sort of them being able to produce the pitch?
I'm sure they could appreciate music, but maybe not.
Maybe just the rhythm.
Such a richness. I guess if you're colourblind, you're not seeing all the colours of the world.
Yeah, that's
but
interesting.
You can still appreciate art. It's just going to look a bit different to you than it does to people who see all the full colours. So
okay.
I guess that's how I'd think of it. Like, if you struggle to hear the differences in pitch, you'll just be having a different experience.
Okay, that's interesting.
But essentially, yeah, other than this 2% of the population, most people can hear pitch very well. And singing is actually more about, it's like any kind of sport. You're training your muscles to help you recreate the sounds that you want to. So the way we create sounds is we breathe in, and then as we breathe out, it passes through our vocal cords in our larynx. And if you put your fingers on your throat and talk or hum, like you can actually feel the vibration while you're talking. It's really, really cool. And another way to think of it is if you were to blow up a balloon.
Like we have in the studio here.
And then let the air out of the top. The vibration that it makes as it comes out. That's also very annoying, isn't it?
Perfect for radio. Oh man, that's squeaky.
Yeah, by changing the way that you vibrate it and changing the sort of stretch of the balloon or anything, that changes the pitch of the noise that's being created. That's exactly how your vocal cords work. And so in order to sort of sing really well, you just have to be able to train your knowledge and your muscle memory so that you're moving your vocal cords in the right way to make the sounds that you want.
That's really cool.
Yeah. There is some physiological difference. So the shape of your skull and your nasal cavities and stuff will affect the timbre of your voice.
That's interesting. Like an echo chamber in your head. Like.
Yeah, essentially. So if you speak outside in the street or speak in a cathedral, it's going to sound different. And that's to do with the way the sound is bouncing around the space. And so the way that the sound bounces around your mouth or your nasal cavities does change the slight kind of tones that come out with it. That's something you can't really control and will determine, like, someone's got a really, really beautiful voice.
But some people have it changed. So I don't know if this is true, but supposedly Michael Jackson had like surgery on his nose to improve the flow of air out of it so he could sing better.
Oh, really?
And I know people who've had things wrong with their nose, which gave them a really nasal voice, and they had bits of their nose broken, and that sort of corrected that to an extent. I can't remember what the surgery's called now.
Oh, but that's so cool. So there, yeah. Proof that if you change your nasal cavity, you can change the way that your voice sounds. And then the sort of other aspect of singing is very much like a psychological one. If you're nervous or tense, you won't be breathing properly. And the best way to get a clean sound with, you know, no kind of off-key overtones is to have a really, really good deep breath that flows through your whole body, apparently.
Okay.
So we could all be top star singers if we just practice, don't get nervous, and maybe make sure we have perfect nasal cavities.
Excellent. Great. I'll get singing in the shower right away.
Yeah, watch out. We'll be Eurovision's next song entry. So moving on from electro swing to something much better. What are we having next, please, Pete?
Oh, let's listen to The Clash, Wrong and Boyo.
Yeah. So lovely and happy. It made me want to dance around the studio.
Yeah.
Exactly how to feel on a Saturday morning. So we've come to the point on the show. Time for an experiment.
Ooh.
Synchronized oohs. So listeners, you will know that today we are making a DIY party poppers. And all you need for this is a cardboard loo roll tube, a balloon, some tape, some wrapping paper, and whatever you want to use as confetti. We've gone for a mixture of tissue paper and paper. So some that's pink and some that's white. And All you need to do first is you cover your cardboard tube in your wrapping paper.
To make it look very nice.
Really pretty, exactly.
This is feeling very Blue Peter as well. This is good.
Yeah, it's a bit off and craftsy, this experiment. Okay? And then the next thing you want to do is you want to take your balloon and just tie a knot in the end where you'd normally tie it, and then slice off the top of the balloon. So I'm just going to try and do that.
Can we make cutting noises on the radio?
Yeah. These scissors are getting a bit stuck.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Clearly not designed for cutting through rubber. Okay, there we go. Once you've done that, you want to stretch the balloon over the edge of one end of your tube. Oh. And make sure it's a nice tight fit. Get it coming as far down the tube as you can. So really pulling it down there, nice and tight. And secure it in place with some sellotape.
Okay.
And you want it to be airtight. You don't want any air to be able to get out from the sides of the balloon. So once you've done that, you should have a tube which is open at one end and the other end has the balloon. And then all you need to do for the last bit is pop in your confetti. So I'm just going to pour mine in now.
This is going to make the biggest mess in the studio, which I'm quite excited about, to be honest.
Pink and white everywhere. Well, it's a birthday. We need to celebrate. So the way that real party poppers work, as I'm sure most of you will be familiar with, is you pull a string, and this string sets off, sort of by friction, a little explosion in the neck of the party popper. And this will either be a tiny amount of explosive powder, or in some cases, it's compressed air. And this explosion creates pressure, which then forces open the cardboard at the bottom of the party popper, and everything bursts out due to the high pressure, and that's why your streamers go everywhere. So we don't have any sort of explosive today.
Which I think is a bit of a shame, but maybe in central London that would be an issue.
Not so easy to make at home as well.
Yeah.
But we are still doing something with pressure. So what should happen is that when you pull down on the end of your balloon, the bit where you've tied the knot, you will be stretching it out, and then as you release it, the balloon will spring back, creating a force that will push the air inside and all the confetti out. So are you ready to have a go, Pete?
Yep, I think mine's just about working.
Okay, I think we need some music to help us. Cool. So here we go.
Hey, okay, ready, set, go!
Woo!
Oh, mine's definitely getting jammed up. But yours is, yeah, there we go. Oh, that's great.
Can I make a bit of a bang? Oh, I just got loads of confetti out. Woo!
Oh no, mine's getting all stuck now.
All the fun. And very safe to do as well. So here we go. Woo! Happy birthday, Soho Radio.
Happy birthday.
And we should take us to another song that's not happy birthday. What are we going to have now?
Cool. Let's listen to I Need You Tonight by Pumpkin Machine.
I Need You Tonight. Much better choice. Okay. Say goodbye to Happy Birthday. And hello to I Need You Tonight by the Pumpkin Machine. When you're here with me, when you're here with me, I feel better. When you're here with me, when you're here with me, I feel warmer. that was I Need You Tonight by Punkin' Machine. So one of my favourite parts of the show, we're going to find out a little bit more about Pete.
Ooh.
But I just want to remind those of you who've been listening, at the end of the show, we will be revealing the answer to what was that all-important ingredient that turned heavy, dense cakes into light and airy ones around the 18th, 19th century. So keep thinking about that. You can tweet us at Soho Radio. So, Pete, I introduced you today as someone who works on the epigenetics of asthma.
Yeah.
Could you tell us more about that? What does that mean?
Okay, so basically in asthma, we don't know exactly what causes asthma. It's a combination probably of your environment and your genome to an extent. But there's not a single piece of DNA which encodes and has instructions for all of you. There's not a single piece of DNA that says you have asthma, you don't have asthma.
Wait, actually, I've realised we should probably start at a slightly
more PhD student.
No, that's my fault. I went straight in there with the question. What is asthma? Maybe would have been
a better starting place.
Sorry, my fault.
No, it's okay. So basically, asthma is, probably most people know someone with asthma. It's basically where your lungs, seize up and then it becomes really difficult to breathe. And for some people, there's medicine that makes them better. But for people with severe asthma, medicine won't necessarily help, and you'll usually end up in hospital maybe once or twice a year.
Really?
So it's still kind of severe. It kills loads of people every year. I think there's 300 million sufferers worldwide.
I had no idea that asthma still killed people.
Yeah. It's much rarer in the UK, but in developing countries and things, yeah, it's more likely.
Have you ever had asthma?
I had very mild asthma as a kid.
Did you have an inhaler?
I did have a little blue inhaler. Yeah, good old Ventolin. Those heady days.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Is that one of the reasons why you were interested to study it?
So I sort of fell into it through sort of a variety of things. But basically, I had to take a year in industry. And there happened to be a drugs company that worked in Switzerland who were willing to take me on. And they did lots of lung disease stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I will definitely go and live in Switzerland for a year. And as such, I learned a load about lung disease. It was really interesting. When I came back, I focused my degree into it and ended up applying for the PhD with Asthma UK. So cheers, Asthma UK.
Great. Whereabouts in Switzerland were you?
It's a place called Basel. So it's the German-French border. It's really quite pretty and
very nice.
A little bit industrial as well. But, go to the nice parts.
Yeah, I was always so jealous of people that got to sort of spend a year abroad during university.
Yeah, no.
Every degree should have that.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so now more into the nitty-gritty. So there's two types of asthma. And the severe one is the one that medication doesn't seem to work on.
Yeah, exactly.
And do they know why that is?
So basically, no. That's sort of the real crux of it. So they're looking at lots of different ways. They're seeing there's a set of drugs called steroids, which works on people without severe asthma, but doesn't work on people with severe asthma. And lots of people are looking to see why the steroids might work, why they might not work in some people. But that's kind of a bit up in the air and no one really knows yet. They're trying to figure that out.
And so the normal response to medicine is that it makes your muscles relax.
So steroids don't necessarily have a relaxing thing. They stop the inflammation in your lungs.
So they stop the little swelling up.
Yes, and then the inflammation stops. Stopping the inflammation stops the cramping up of the lungs.
Got it.
Yeah.
Cool. So what are they trying next then? Or what are you specifically
looking at? So the thing I'm interested in is, like I said before, there isn't a single stretch of DNA that says, you have asthma, you don't have asthma. But there's you have lots of DNA which make up all of you, but mm-hmm. the instructions for every cell is in each cell, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So the instructions for bone are, say, in your brain cells, but those bits are switched off. So it turns out there's lots of these little flags that say, make me or don't make me. And we know, what we guess is that maybe there's a set of flags which will say, if you have this flag and this flag, then you'll have severe asthma. And then you can try targeting where those flags are.
So you think there's a set of instructions on top of the DNA which creates the severe asthma.
And that's what epigenetics is. Epi meaning above, genetics is your DNA. And that's where the name comes from.
And what, so if you could work out what the sort of flags were, as it were, could you then get rid of them?
We're starting to find drugs which can target them quite non-specifically. So maybe they'd take all the flags off your DNA or put flags all over your DNA, which is not ideal. But slowly people are getting better and better at finding ways so you can focus in on the specific flags and then take them away or put new ones there.
And so, obviously we're talking about really minute things. We're talking about instructions within the center of your cell on your DNA. So how do you go about looking at those sorts of things?
So Oh, okay, so I'm risking making everyone's eyes glaze over and drift off. But basically what you can do is you get a little antibody which grabs the flag,
mm-hmm.
and then you rip that bit of DNA out, and then you use something... You can do sequencing, which is just reading off the DNA. So you rip out the bits of DNA and read those sections, and then using a computer you can figure out where those sections came from, and then you can start to target.
By saying this is what it looks like.
Yeah, this is the region of DNA that is affected by the flag.
Oh, amazing. And so that's what you sort of spend every day doing.
Yeah, exactly. So lots of it's sort of collecting samples from people, and eventually when we have enough, we can basically put them into this, like, do this process, like putting out all the flags and then sequence it. And hopefully that will give us an idea of where we should be focusing our efforts to treat asthma.
That's amazing. And so hopefully at the end of this, there'll be a new kind of way of treating the severe asthma.
So at the end of my PhD, hopefully we'll have maybe one or two bits of DNA that we can say, hey, this should be interesting. We should look further into that. That's sort of the long-term goal.
How close are you to finishing?
So I'm about a year and a half through now. And so, yeah, there's another year and a half left to finish the PhD, and then my money runs out. So I have to try and convince people to give us more money or something like that. Yeah.
And do you think you want to stay working in lungs?
I don't know. I'm sort of at the minute torn between trying to do lots more sciencey things and then sort of pushing into filmmaking-y things as well, which is maybe like not science at all, which is maybe not the topic of this
definitely. So I mean, we said at the beginning you are also a film director, and I was gonna say, is there a science to filmmaking?
There's a really interesting idea at the minute. So lots of people talk about big data and how if you have enough information, with say if you collected all the film scripts in the world and then looked at their IMDb score, maybe there'd be some way of using big computing to find out what makes a script that makes a load of money and what doesn't.
So like finding an algorithm for a winning blockbuster.
Yeah. So there's lots of companies that have like invested a lot of money, and some film producers take it quite seriously, this sort of script analysis that they do before making the film. And there's this sort of obviously a big argument between creatives and sort of people trying to push these script analysis softwares, where the creatives say you can't program to find like the right script or make art, whereas you've got like other people who I think they're kind of like shysters basically trying to make a load of money off like the paranoia of producers.
It is a really interesting field though, because I definitely remember reading about a computer program that was creating spontaneous artwork, and
okay.
it was actually programmed to sort of be quite random. Each different artwork was different, and it would combine colors and shapes, and so I think that there is definitely a lot of people looking at what is creativity and can creativity be programmed.
Yeah, because it's really interesting. I mean, it's kind of maybe the difference between, like, I don't know, for me at least, like, I think art has to have a motive, whereas if you're just creating patterns that look nice, I think that's maybe more like the craft side of things. So yeah, I think that maybe like an intention is probably what makes it art, as opposed to sort of like something that just happens to look nice.
Oh, I like that. That's such a good idea. Art has to have a motive, and that's the kind of human aspect.
Yeah, exactly. Which is why, until, I don't know, unless we get AI, which, and then maybe AI can make art. But I think at the minute we're not at the stage where computers can make it.
Creepy Google bears coming back.
Yeah, exactly.
Making some art for us.
Give them some crayons. And
so what's your latest film about?
My latest film is about two sort of grown-up kids who try and hypnotize their mum to stop smoking.
Ooh.
But it all goes wrong when they realize they can't make a come to again at the end. So it's sort of like, hopefully it's a little bit of a comedy, a little bit of a drama. Like, it's kind of about bickering siblings essentially, and sort of like the sort of like hypnotized mother just in the background ominously watching on as they sort of try and figure out how to get her to wake up again.
Which way did they hypnotize her? Is it the classic like swinging a coin or like click, so, click and you're under?
Yeah, so it starts with her just sort of like reading off, like you get these hypnosis transcripts where you say you're walking down the beach and you see the cigarettes drifting away into the ocean and you feel good about them leaving, and or like, so they have like positive reinforcement hypnosis scripts, mm-hmm. where they say sort of like lots of like positive things about losing them, or they can work sort of more negatively, like where they try and associate bad feelings towards like cigarettes if you had a bad experience,
yeah.
or like maybe just things which are unpleasant, and so you have, yeah, so basically you try and like emphasize the horrible nature, like you're going to die young, and so every time you see a cigarette you're sort of like shocked and upset by seeing the cigarettes there. So yeah, they go for that sort of like speaking hypnosis. I don't know
so
what
like
this
conditioning.
Name is.
Positive reinforcement and negative reinforcement.
Yeah.
Like when you give rats an electric shock and they just don't go and eat that bit of food again.
Yeah, exactly.
But nicer with words, not electric shocks.
Electrocuting all the mice.
Oh, that sounds really cool. When will it be finished?
So I'm aiming to have it in London Film Festival, and the deadline for submission is the 12th of June. So it will be finished before then.
Brilliant.
But yeah, more time in the edit suite.
Cracking
should be fun.
And it links back to lungs. Anti-smoking.
Excellent. Yeah, exactly. Don't do that. Yeah, subliminal message. I didn't even notice my own thing. Excellent. Yeah, don't smoke,
just
kids.
Living, breathing lungs.
Yeah.
Your two fields coming together.
Yeah. Oh, man, I didn't even notice that. I'm so entrenched in lung disease that I write stories about it.
I love it because I think a lot of people think of scientists as like purely do science. And it's great that you're like, you do real science, but also you're making amazing films at the same time, and a lot of people think they're very different, but
I think probably they are to an extent. I think like quite a lot of it you have to be quite, I think you have to be like quite picky to make science work, and you have to be quite picky to like try and get film to come together as well. Like, it's obviously when you're doing science, it's being picky about pipetting the right amount of liquid into your like plates, and with filmmaking it's being quite picky about
lighting and exposure and when
actors
you edit it together.
Like trying to get people to kind of do what you want in a way that's interesting,
and really pushing for keeping your vision strong. And it's a laborious process as well, like they're both quite long processes with an ultimate goal.
Bringing it two together, I feel good about myself now.
So on that note, what are we going to listen to next?
Cool. Let's listen to let's listen to Caribou, Odessa.
Odessa by Caribou. Cool. Lovely. Really enjoying your song choices today, Pete.
Thank you so much. I'm glad you like them.
I know. I really love having people choose the music because I often discover loads of stuff that I would never have heard of before.
Yeah. Good stuff. I love making the playlist as well. It's really fun. Get to listen to all my music.
Yeah, bring out the faves. So we're coming to the end of our show, and it's time to reveal the answer to our thunk, which was, what ingredient was used or discovered in cake making to turn them from heavy, dense pound cakes into light, airy sponges that we know and love today? Ooh. Pete, what you said, you think you might have an idea because you had a disastrous cake making experience.
Well, I think this, like, the more I think about it, the more I think it's probably just my disastrous cake making abilities. And
I'm also pretty bad at making cakes.
I always think that I can measure things by eye, and then it doesn't work. So, I mean, I think the last time I made a mistake, I was told that I put way too much butter in, so I guess less butter is the answer. No, I don't know.
So the traditional kind of sponge or pound cake it's called a pound cake because it has four main ingredients: eggs, flour, sugar, and butter. And you had them in equal ingredients, and it was the discovery of using eggs that made all the difference. And this was because before eggs, we would get things to rise by using yeast. And yeast is obviously a microorganism.
Oh, so cool fact about yeast. We use yeast to make lots of like products. So insulin is made by yeast, I think.
Yeah.
But this week, I think, some scientists have discovered that you can basically recreate what happens inside opium poppies inside yeast. And as such, that they can make like opium and codeine in like the little microorganisms. But they said that they wouldn't do it because they were worried that if they put the information on how to do it out there, that people would... Basically, you could do it in the same way as brewing beer. You could brew heroin at home.
Oh my God.
So they decided that, actually, we'll just sit on this and wait for like regulators to figure it out. But it's a great idea because it will save loads of money because like opium poppies are really difficult to grow and they only grow in certain places.
And we still use it in medicines.
Yeah, and we it's literally grown. There's a few drugs that are like that. You always imagine them to be synthesized, but like... They're just grown in poppy fields. It's really cool.
That's mental. So
sorry.
You could have a vat of yeast
to make your heroin.
Making your drugs at home. Yeah. Wow.
Anyway, slight diversion.
Whole new
sorry.
Definition to the term homebrew.
Yeah, exactly.
Before people just used to use yeast, and the yeast would feed on sugar, and one of the waste products from this process was it would release carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide is a gas, and these bubbles of gas would collect in the cake mixture and sort of rise it. And it's still used a lot in bread, but in cakes it wasn't that effective. The cakes were a bit, because you've got all that butter, the cakes are much heavier, and the yeast alone wasn't enough to help it rise. So what they found was actually when you add egg to the mixture, you are able to really reinforce these air bubbles. So you, to start with, when you're making a cake, apparently, I mean, I'm not an expert.
Yeah, okay, I'm all ears here.
You start by creaming together the sugar and the butter. So you're beating them together until they're nice and soft and all mixed in. And the sugar, because it's in crystal form, will sort of catch pockets of air on its rough surface.
Oh, okay.
And in this way, bring air into that butter. And as you're sort of beating it all together, you get pockets of air encased in the butter fat.
Ah.
But if you were to then bake this, fat is obviously a liquid when it gets hot. So these sort of fat bubbles would just liquidize and disappear. So the eggs are made of proteins. And when you heat proteins,
goes hard.
They denature and they become solid. So if you mix in the eggs as well with the butter and the sugar, you not only have your sort of bubbles of air encased in fat, but they've also got this layer of protein. And that means when you then bake the cake, you get these little protein bubbles of air. So the bubbles have this sort of solid structure around them. The air is held inside the cake. And then your final ingredient is flour. And flour creates like the scaffolding that holds everything else together. And it does this through two proteins that, when they combine, form something called gluten. I'm sure we've all heard of gluten. A lot of people are gluten intolerant. And it's quite like an elastic, it makes kind of elastic threads. And so, you know, when you cut a cake and you kind of see it's all
bubbly. So that's kind of the sponginess of
The sponginess is the elasticity, and then the sort of bubbles that are all contained in between.
That's so cool.
So that's how we make them light and airy. And it was eggs. If you tweeted in eggs, then you were correct. And then, well, we now have much more modern ways of getting the bubbles in. So we have baking powder, which is a mixture of bicarbonate of soda.
Is that a new thing? How new is bicarb?
Oh, gosh, I do not know, but I would guess sometime in the sort of 20th century.
Okay.
That's just a guess.
We'll find that out and put it on the Twitter later.
And tweet a proper researched idea, but that would be my guess. And that is just, you've got bicarb of soda, which is an alkali, and normally sodium aluminium sulfate or some other kind of acid in a powder form. So you've got these two powders. And when you mix them with water or any other liquid, they're able to combine together.
Oh, like when you put vinegar and baking soda together, it all puffs up.
Yeah, it's a neutralisation reaction, as everyone learns at school.
GCSE, yeah. Yeah. Having flashbacks.
And so when you combine an acid and alkali, they make water and carbon dioxide. So by putting in baking powder, you're making a lot of carbon dioxide much faster than the yeast would, and putting in all this air as well. But back in the day, you would have to beat the eggs and flour and sugar together for literally... There's a quote from... an American author of popular cookbooks, Miss Leslie, in 1857, she describes a technique that allows you to beat the eggs for up to an hour without fatigue. So she had this special beating technique.
Oh, wow.
But then she also said that the butter and the sugar at the beginning is the hardest part of cake making, and this should be done by a manservant.
That's of the time, yeah.
If you're going to cut the baking powder, make sure you have a manservant on hand to help you make your cake. And that's pretty much all we've got time for today. I leave you with that.
Oh, man. That was really interesting. Cool.
Yeah, thank you. And a final song to play us out, Pete. What are we going to finish with?
Cool. Let's finish with LCD Sound System, Time to Get Away.
Fantastic. Here it is. Cool. Goodbye. So it's time to get away. It's time to get away.